times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you don't parry. Yo, baby, what's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal.
Hello, you are listening to the Circle Day Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. On tonight's show is Ozagafo Seku, an author, documentary filmmaker, public intellectual, organiser, pastor and theologian. He has fought for justice in the wake of highly publicised police murders of black people in the US, travelled to Ferguson and trained hundreds of protesters in non-violent civil disobedience. While there, Seku was arrested twice, once for praying in front of riot police and later while co-leading a group of religious leaders. He says that the clergy's place is with the protesters in Ferguson. Hello, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, it's great to be here.
It's great. Thank you for coming on the show. Let me get going with the questions because I don't want to run out of time. What does the situation in the US with the systematic police murders of black people in America reveal to you?
I mean, it's a logical extension of a history of violence against black bodies inside the American empire. The creation of our policing forces was predicated upon the slave patrols in which policing agents were used to police black bodies that dared to be free. And so this is part of the history of the second sin of America, the first sin of America being the slaughter of Native Americans and the destruction of their culture and attacks on their land. And then the second sin being the enslavement of black bodies in such a way to serve the needs of the capitalist empire.
Yes. Can you talk about specific demonstrations and campaigns you've been part of?
I've been privileged to serve a struggle that has emerged here in Ferguson, Missouri. Ferguson, Missouri is a subset of St. Louis, Missouri, which has a total of 91 municipalities, and Ferguson being one of them. As a child raised in St. Louis, I was told not to drive through Ferguson because of its draconian practices of racially profiling African Americans. And the death of Michael Brown and his body being laid in the street for 4.5 hours ignited a movement in America in which young people are resisting over time and space against both a cowardly leadership class that has refused to confront state power and the very state power in which it's taken their lives. And I've been blessed to serve in this struggle.
And what were the circumstances which led to your arrest in Ferguson?
Well, I've been arrested four times.
Four times?
Ferguson. The first time I was arrested was in an instance outside the Ferguson Police Department in which riot police were coming at a group of young people who were occupying the street. And in paternalistic and patriarchal fashion, I thought they were not prepared to encounter the police, so I went in front of the police and kneeled and prayed. I was picked up and arrested, taken and placed in custody. Into a bloodstained van where they had beaten someone prior to my being placed in the van. And those same young people that I was trying to protect stayed into the streets until I was released from that van. The second time I was arrested during Moral Monday, which is part and parcel of a broader struggle in America campaigning against various forms of spreading the safety net and other actions that have attempted to curb democratic possibilities. So a group of clergy repented for our sins of not standing with young people and were arrested outside the Ferguson Police Department. The third time I was snatched off the street by police along with Tef Poe and Terra of Hands Up United in the midst of an action. And I was arrested recently in August on the anniversary of Michael Brown's death, where we clergy stormed a barricade at the Department of Justice, demanding that the federal government intervene in Ferguson and dismantle the corrupt police department here.
Yes. The right-wing white militia called the Oath Keepers in Ferguson came out during the protests against police murders. Can you talk about who they were and how that situation played out?
Well, a number of private organizations hired police, what they call private security, which were Oath Keepers, who stood on top of buildings on South Florissant Street, yelled out explicitive to black people as they walked past. And then they paraded the street with a military-style assault weapon without any contact with the police, without any restrictions. In the United States, there's an obsession with our Second Amendment, which gives citizens the right to bear arms, which I believe is a constitutional flaw, second only to the denial of women and black folks' right to vote, which was subsequently overturned. But predicated on this constitutional flaw, the Second Amendment, they parade around with their weapons and in a way that African Americans would not be allowed to, and they encounter no police restraint at all. And ultimately, it was an act of intimidation against young folks who were in the street protesting because they were contracted to protect private businesses.
And what comparisons and differences do you draw from the 60s civil rights movement with today's Black Lives Matter protests?
Well, we've entered into the age of Ferguson, and the age of Ferguson is part and parcel of a level of global resistance, particularly to the privatization of public space and the militarization of public space. And so whether it be the Arab Spring, whether it be the resistance that emerged in London after the death of Mark Duggan.
Yes.
The death of Mark Duggan, when we see all over the world that historically marginalized people are resisting various forms of tyranny as it relates to the privatization of public space and the militarization of public space. And so as a result of that, this movement, Ferguson, and much of what we see around the world looks a lot less like the civil rights movement, because the U.S. civil rights movement, in terms of its popular myth, I'm not talking about what was actually happening on the ground, the ideological nuances and the political cleavages that were set at that time. But the popular myth of the civil rights movement, which was about full integration into the system, what we see now is a calling into question that very system and the calling for a new system of existence. And we see it throughout the world. And Ferguson is part of that. And this is why I termed this age the age of Ferguson.
You talked in the past about electoral politics in America, calling the eventual right for women and black people to vote a bourgeoisie reform. It's very interesting because that's a similar kind of feeling that I have about the voting system. Can you talk about that?
Well, in the context of the United States, the system was structured in such a way that it favored property-owning white men, and that the Democratic Project began as a compromise project, and that what we've seen in terms of the advancements in America have just been a continued advancement within the context of bourgeois reform. And one of the reasons that you have not seen the kind of revolution that you've seen in other parts of the world is that America's working class is a unique working class in human history, and that is a unique working class who has more sympathy for the landed than they do their own selves. And so this aspirational politics and Horatio Algiers mythos dominates much of American culture and plays itself out in certain forms of political mobilization, which has often been focused on electoral politics, which has been about the integration into a morally bankrupt system. And so even in the midst of that bourgeois reform, the nation is so recalcitrant that it's still attempting to deny black people the right to vote, even as we speak today. The state of Alabama just passed a series of draconian laws and policies restricting African-American access to the ballot, which includes requiring African-Americans to have IDs. But in the counties that are the most heavily populated African-Americans, there are no places for you to go get an ID. And so even in the midst of the bourgeois reform, the nation is so recalcitrant that it is even attempting to deny folks access to a morally bankrupt system.
Do you think the lives? Do you think the Black Lives Matter campaign links up with global injustice? If so, how?
Well, I mean, there's been, first of all, the tear gas. So at one level, the empire is internationalist and intersectional in its function, right? So in the tear gas that was shot at us in Ferguson, is also the same tear gas that was shot at me when I was in Palestine in 2012. When we look what we are facing is an empire that is controlled by global elites who are exchanging both capital and military resources. And so in that sense, our struggles are innately internationalist and intersectional, given the fact that the vast majority, a significant amount of police departments and police heads in major cities in the United States have been trained by Israelis, been trained by the Israeli military, and that there's an exchange of data between Mossad and the FBI. The heroic work of Edward Snowden revealed this to us. And so when we look at these that construct that we're living in an internationalist contradiction, the way in which global capital and global militarized power is functioning, the movement is international. Now, we've had very direct changes. So Patrice Cullors has come and toured London. A group of folks from Right to Protest has come from London and brought with them mothers who have lost children in the in police custody there in London have come to the U.S. We've had Palestinian parents come and visit us here in Ferguson. And so there's a direct connection between what is happening on the ground in Ferguson and other parts of the U.S. and what else is happening in the world.
What are your thoughts on affecting positive change against racism by having black people in positions of power to enact policy as opposed to taking to the streets and having uprisings?
Well, I think it's a false dichotomy. I think that false dichotomy is based on the idea that electoral politics and protest and marching have never changed anything, but nothing's ever changed without it. Meaning that social movements are thermometers, right? Are thermostats, rather. Social movements set political climate. Whereas that elections and public policies are thermometers, they measure it. So when you have people in the street, you create the possibility of an electoral process that can, at some level, capture the doings and suffering of everyday people in such a way that it renders a politician who is also compromised within the framework of a morally bankrupt system. So you don't get Bernie Sanders in the U.S. without Black Lives Matter. Because at one level, an old white guy talking about socialism is a lot less scary than a group of angry young black people in the street.
Yes, correct. I agree. You've talked with Cornel West about bridging the gap between the hip-hop and civil rights generation. What forces have been at play that have dampened the revolutionary spirit that the Black Panthers once ignited?
Well, no, I think a lot of young people have recaptured that spirit. It has never been dead. There's always been a radical strain of black folks in the U.S., even from when the first African got off the boat. So there's been a level of resistance that has attempted to characterize and keep track of a new mode of being that was about a radical transformation of capital and adjusting of power relationships in such a way that the proletariat were given a level of epistemic privilege in the framework of the public discourse. That's always been the case. So whether that begins with the first slave resistance all the way to young people on the street in Ferguson. And so there, of course, the ways in which bourgeois elements will attempt to garner that public energy to also to eke out some form of a conservative reform. So that's just part of the calculus of the social movement. But the revolutionary spirit has not been tampered.
Mm-hmm. And could you talk about the prison system in America, if people don't really know? Because obviously America was founded on pretty much slavery, and people, I don't know if most people don't are not really fully aware the extent of that. It's the same for the Britain and the money that came from slavery. But the prison system in America obviously targets, in terms of statistics, black males more than anyone. Could you talk about that?
Well, actually, there's been about a 500% increase in the incarceration of black women.
Okay,
and
yes.
And some 33% of trans folks in the U.S. Experience an encounter with the prison industrial complex.
Mm.
We also have expanding numbers of undocumented people, where there's been, a 500,000 or so people deported who are undocumented in the U.S. And so the way the system has turned its ugly head on everyone who's othered, combined with we have a very expansive prison industrial complex in the U.S. and private prison system. Moreover, a group called ALEC, which is a council that writes legislation for politicians that has supported privatization of prisons, as well as creating greater laws to help fill those prisons there. So what happens in the U.S., for instance, a private company will take over a governing body, a prison system, and then whether it be a state or a municipality, and that state or municipality has to guarantee an 80% occupancy, meaning that the state has to create laws to ensure that there are at least 70 to 80% filled with prisoners at any given moment. And so there's this ungodly relationship between the prison industrial complex, between the prison system, private corporations, and municipal and statewide governments that have privatized our prison system in the United States.
Mm. And we've come to the last question. Who have been your inspirations, past and present? I'm putting you on the spot, sorry.
I mean, primarily it's young people. It's,
okay.
It's primarily queer black women. It's been black women and queer black women who have led this movement, whether it be, Lena Gardner up with Minneapolis's Black Lives Matter, or, Patrice, Opal, and Alicia created Black Lives Matter, or Ashley Gates, or Alexis Templeton, or Brittany Farrell, or Kayla Reed. The list can go on and on of amazing, dope black women who I actually, I take my orders from.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so very much.
Hopefully I'll meet you in person one day soon.
Yes, soon. Bless you.
I'll let you go. I'll be in touch. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So you've been listening to The Circle Day on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thank you for our guest, Sekou, for coming on. We are always on Tuesdays at 10 p.m. If you want to go to our website for past shows, go to www.thecircleday.com. Until next week, turn on, tune in and kick off.
Of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you don't parry, yo baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone, all alone. In awe at the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July. While those fireworks were exploding, I was burning, that swinging my black flag high, eating the peanuts that the parties have tossed you in the backseat of your father's new Ford. You believe in the ballot, you believe in reform. You have faith in the elephant and jackass. And to you, solidarity's a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, but you're a patriot. You thought I was only joking when I screamed kill Whitey at the top of my lungs, at the cops in their cars and the men in their suits. No, I won't take your hand and marry the state. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me.